Well, hello. It's November 20th, 2020. And so far we have, it looks like, three people on the call. And I'll just remind you that this is a not an organized webinar or anything. It's more just an informal gathering. The overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting, and also the topic of how we advance our skills. This is being recorded for people who can't make it. And callers, you can mute your phone if you think you're going to have noise in your background by doing a 4-star, and then 4-star again unmutes you. But if there's not much noise in your background, don't do that, because we haven't got a whole lot of people on our call. And let's just jump in. I have a few sort of announcements and things to make, but why don't we just jump in and see who's here and what concerns or questions you might have.
This is Gail Coleman in Tucson.
Hello, Gail.
Hi, Molly. I have to say I don't right off the top have any questions, but I did want to participate. So
great.
I can maybe come up.
Well, it's always good to have Gail from Arizona. Who else is here, and would you like to just chime in, and we'll see if anything what you want to bring up?
Hi, everyone. My name is Lindsay, and I'm actually in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
I was in your counseling intensive, probably the last one you hosted in March in L.A.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And, yeah, I'm really just starting out with private practice, so I guess one of my biggest things right now is when I see online the dietitians and nutrition coaches offering their services, it seems a lot of what we discussed as cheerleading. So I'm wondering if there's a way that you kind of set the or kind of expectations for what your process
I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Is that on your line, Lindsay?
No, I don't have anyone
else. Oh, okay. Well, the background noise has gone away. So you're wanting to have a discussion of cheerleading. And
yeah.
How that compares, yeah. Mm-hmm. We
just
could
because
get
I
to feel that.
Like there's certain methods of counseling that are advertised online that are a little different than the classic motivational process. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's plan to get that. That is an important topic. Who else wants to just say hello and maybe chime in about what you've got on your mind?
I'll go next.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
This is Ashley Rizzo. I'm calling from Columbia, Missouri. And I didn't have like a set in stone question. I just, I've been practicing for about 10 years, and I just started a private practice about a year and a half ago. And I am realizing that I thought I was doing a lot more motivational interviewing than I actually am. And so I am just trying to kind of take in all that I can. And then I thought, well, I actually pulled up the website to listen to previous calls and then saw this one today, like 10 minutes ago. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to jump in and join.
Yeah, well, cool. Well, welcome. Welcome, Ashley. We could sort of talk about, well, how does one assess where you are now and advance the next few steps? It sounds like that's what you're ready for, Ashley.
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody else here want to chime in about what's on their mind?
Yeah, I have something. This is
sure.
Shoshana, and I live in New York, in the Bronx section of New York. I don't know. I did have a specific question that I'll make kind of more broad. I have to get off early, so I don't know if we'll have time for this question. But the question is when, and kind of specific to just order eating, but when you're speaking to somebody, to a a client, and you don't at all, the two of you just don't see things in the same way, I guess, and I think you have a tip on this, you know, when someone else wants that patient to be seen, not necessarily the person, what sort of motivational interviewing techniques can you use to, I guess, or to elicit some sort of question or thought to get you to be a little bit more on the same page?
That's a good one, isn't it? And you say you're not going to be able to stay on for the full hour. How about we begin with that one, and for your sake, and then we'll get back to Ashley and Lindsay's questions that they brought up. So Shoshana, tell me a little bit more about, you're talking about disordered eating or eating disorders.
I had a specific patient in mind, so I can talk about that specific case, but I think that's the broad question, because I'm sure this comes up a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can give you specific case consultation about a specific case.
No, but I'll tell you talking about the case if I can just kind of how this comes up. But basically a patient, and again, this can be often, but, you know, lost a lot of weight because they were obese or overweight, and the doctor told them to lose weight, and now has gone from obese or overweight to disordered eating. And very happy with it. Very happy with going to the gym and go and eating one meal a day and only eating protein and just very happy. So then you're seeing them and you think, okay, this is not good. And you ask questions like, what is your quality of life? What happens when you go out with friends and they're all eating and you can't eat anything? And what happens like when you see favorite foods? And he's just happy. So. You clearly see a problem. The person doesn't really see a problem at all. So that's, I think I was looking even for questions to get him to admit something.
Well, so it sounds like you're concerned possibly that actually his nutritional status is not ideal because he's eating in such an extreme way. And also you have a sense that it's not sustainable and it's so rigid that he can't. There's not much room for a life in there. One of the questions to bring up is what is he asking you for? Okay. And if it feels to you like he is asking you for something that you're not willing to do, like reinforce that eating that way is a good idea, or give him more ideas to lose more weight, or, you know, if he really is asking you something that you're not okay with, it's okay to say that, to simply say it. Another way to look at it, a particularly MI way to look at it, is to essentially ask permission to give a perspective of how you're looking at this situation. Ask his permission, and then give your perspective in as succinct a way as you possibly can. And it might be important for you, Shoshana, ahead of time to have, like, put on a 3x5 card or, you know, really made it really short and sweet what you feel. Now, if you began to try to do that, Shoshana, what would you say to him? What's the nugget of what you want to say to him?
Meaning what the concern is?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I think it's what you said, a concern is that, I think maybe validate that he feels so good that he lost weight and this was a goal of his, but it doesn't seem like he's getting adequate nutrition currently. And it doesn't seem sustainable. And what is his ultimate goal? Because when I asked him also, you know, what is your ultimate goal in terms of weight loss? It was to keep going down. So.
Right, which certainly sounds like anorexia to me. Right.
Right.
That it's never low enough. Yeah.
Right.
So you have a few factual things you could say to him that you believe the way he is eating is nutritionally inadequate. Right? and that you don't see this as being sustainable in the long run. And that could be, it could be stated from the point of view of, I've worked with a lot of people over the years, and what I've noticed is that when someone eats this rigidly, they're not able to maintain it. Now, he may say, oh, no, I can do this. It's fine. So then basically all you have is the nutritional adequacy part left. And he is seeing a nutritionist. So ideally he will listen to you. Sean, after the you're done the call, give me an email because I could send you a copy of a tip I wrote called How to Bring Up Tough Stuff.
Is this essentially in your book, or it's on the...
It's in volume 3 of my practice.
Okay, I have the book.
Do you have... Okay. It's in tip... It's tip 81, if you have volume 3, okay?
Yeah, I do.
Because it gives a fairly succinct sort of format to use, where you ask permission first, and then you state a few facts, as short and sweet as you can, because somebody's more apt to hear it if it's short and sweet, and then ask for feedback from him. And it's really, it's not easy to do that, but the sort of quiet and clearest that you can be, the best. And I'm hearing you also want to affirm him. And that's tricky because you don't want to go on and on about how pleased he is and everything, because that's just reinforcing that he keep doing it, and he'll hear that you think he's just fine. And you don't. See if you can be as honest as you can.
Right. I thought it was more, confusing for him from his perspective of why he was people on his back for so many years telling him to lose weight, and now people are telling him from the confusion more, I think, of the situation.
Yes, absolutely. And you could reflect that back to him, that makes sense to you that he would be very confused, and that he is still in this stage of figuring out, how to find the middle ground or the way to do this finally the way he is and maintain adequate nutrition, right? Which is the thing you're going to keep hammering, right?
Right. Okay. I think that makes
sense.
Not
hammering, that sounds too small, or too strong. It makes sense to just be gently, this is inadequate. And then you may have a few other specific things to back it up. That amount of protein isn't enough to keep your muscles or your body from burning up muscles, or whatever way you want to put it, whatever little facts that you can put in there. Tough situation.
Yeah, but I appreciate that. I think that's very helpful.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead
and look at that tip 81 again and see what you can find there.
Right. It makes me feel better that you acknowledge that tough stuff.
Yes. It is tough stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's okay to, throw in there, I hear that you and I look at this differently. Are you willing to hear the way I look at it? No? Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure. Let's get back to check in with what Lindsay was bringing up. Lindsay, nice to hear your voice. You were one of the intrepid ones that still came to the workshop in mid-March in person in L.A., and we made it out of that there without giving each other COVID. And that was my last in-person MI training. And actually, I'll take this opportunity to mention that I have been doing MI trainings online now, virtual, and it's working really well. I don't believe I'm going to go back to in-person trainings. I've been really pleasantly surprised about how well this has worked. I've switched it's so that it's, instead of being 2 full days, it's 6 2-hour classes each a week apart, so it takes 6 weeks to do it. But there's little practice sessions in between, and it just really works very well. There are two places left in the course that starts toward the end of January. Anyway, so Lindsay, you mentioned something about cheerleading. And you said you were made aware of it at the training you came to, because I cautioned people against too much cheerleading and that cheerleading is not very MI consistent. And then you said you have a sense that there are a lot of your competitors or your colleagues who do seem to be doing a lot of cheerleading. Am I getting that right?
Seen there's a lot of follow up with clients, and they post screenshots of the way that they interact, and it's very much cheering them on. And I want to be supportive, but in a way that's authentic and helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me ask you, Lindsay, when you're interacting with clients, is it your natural tendency to do cheerleading? And by cheerleading, I mean, oh, good for you. Oh, that's great. You know, that kind of thing. Is that something you do naturally?
Yes.
Or not? It is. Okay. and I hope it's clear that I'm not saying to you that that's bad and you shouldn't do it. I'm going to wrap your knuckles. that's not what we're talking about. The research shows that when feedback to clients about things they're doing well takes the form of a statement, it's stronger. It actually lands stronger and is more effective in terms of supporting change. And it's not easy to shift into that way of being with clients if we're used to just saying, oh, good for you. So what had you hoped for from this discussion about cheerleading? More examples or what?
I guess it's just something that I've been struggling with in figuring out my own personal style compared to what I've seen, thinking, and this might be a thinking falsy pattern on my end, that clients are expecting that kind of treatment, and when the counseling process of MI is a little different from what they might have experienced from personal trainers or other practitioners in the past, they might feel that it's not what they're expecting or some confusion.
Hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think I'm hearing your a little concern in your voice that people will be disappointed that they want the cheerleading, want and expect it.
Yes, I think that's accurate.
Mhm. And I'm not going to tell you you shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess all I'm suggesting to you, Lindsay, is that you, if you're willing to, of course, do some experimenting with a few clients here and there, deliberately when you're about to say, oh, good for you, when they come in and report something.
Okay.
A first step is to shift your language to, you're proud of yourself, or, you know, with a smile in your voice and a smile in your face if you're on Zoom or whatever. Either you're proud of yourself or you met your goals this week, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing that is a statement that is affirming, or even wording it a little differently, like you've taken important steps, or anybody else have any other examples they can think of ways to do affirmations when you feel like cheerleading? Anybody?
I don't have another idea. This is Ashley. But I will say that I can relate to this because my personality is not like super bubbly type of cheerleader, mm-hmm. but it's just my nature to be like, oh, that's great. You're doing really great with this. Because it's just, mm-hmm. that's just what comes out. And so it is hard to change the thought process to an affirmation rather than just like, oh, you did really well with increasing vegetables this week, mm-hmm. which is still cheerleading.
Yeah, well, notice if it was increasing vegetables, you set that goal for yourself of increasing vegetables, and here they are. You know, if you're looking at their records, or you've surprised yourself and discovered some vegetables you like, or that kind of thing. I know that it, on our end, it feels weaker. It feels like I'm not boosting them up enough. And it might feel like that at first with from the client's perspective, particularly if they're used to, you know, the classic personal trainer sort of, oh, good for you every, you know, 30 seconds as they're doing their weightlifting or whatever. and again, I'm not sitting here saying you're bad or you absolutely have to make that switch. I'm just pointing out to you the research shows that it's more effective in the long run. I think if there are other examples. See, the idea is that to get away from me, the dietitian, I'm telling you, you're doing a good job, to the person affirming themselves with your help, you know, with your reminder, because a lot of people, you know, minimize their things that they're achieving. And yet they're it's going to be more motivating for them if it ties into their own sense of achievement. How are we doing?
It's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, Lindsay, is there anything else you need about if this is a tough topic.
I think it's a matter
another,
of practicing, honestly. Go on. Hearing those examples is very helpful, so I'll just, you know, experiment and practice.
Yeah. I have one more thought for you. Lindsay, I don't know if it's possible for you to audio tape your sessions at all. If it is, you could go back and stop at the points where you ended up cheerleading and just give yourself plenty of time to think of ways you could do a straightforward MI affirmation, say it out loud, and then move on and look for the next one. How does that sound?
That sounds great. I'll ask for permission to record my next session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I wrote a tip on recording sessions if anybody needs, see if I can find it. It's in here somewhere. I have written too many tips.
Molly,
yes.
Molly, this is Gail. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You have an affirming tip 63 in volume 3.
Right.
There's
and
that.
Recording sessions for self-assessment, 73, which is in volume 3 as well. If anybody is listening to this and doesn't have volume 3 or whatever volume we're talking about, email me and tell me which tip it is, and I could send you a PDF of that tip. The thing about that recording sessions tip is that I mention like wording of how to bring it up with the client if it's tough for you, and also examples of things you can do with the recording. Okay. Yeah, and thank you, Gail, for that, that suggestion. Where are we? So Ashley had a sort of a general concern about realizing that you're using less of the MI skills than you thought. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. So I've done lots of continuing education on motivational interviewing. And at the time that I'm doing that, I'm always like, oh, yes, this makes so much sense, and I'm going to start doing this. And then I felt like my outcomes with the clients that I have just weren't what they should be or what I would like for them to be. And so I actually had reached out to you about, I don't know, probably almost a year ago, at like the beginning of this year. And I got connected through you with IFIOC, I think is that acronym?
Oh, yes, with John Gilbert and them, yeah.
Yeah. So that's been really helpful. And where I'm at with it now is I have done 3 coaching sessions, and they do the report, the MICA report. And so my first one, I don't remember the exact numbers that I have, but my first one was whatever number, whatever score I got. And then they've like sequentially gotten worse over time.
Oh.
And so I'm like, I feel like I thought I was doing these things, and then I'm just not. And so honestly, I think that you have said something that kind of triggered my memory of that I need to do to be improving with this, which is recording the sessions, because I do record them and I submit them for the MICA, but I don't like practice listening for things, like listening for change talk and then pausing and then actually practicing responding to the change talk outside of the session.
Right. Yeah. Okay, Ashley, let's catch up the other people that the IFIOC, is that what it is? I always forget what it is. It's the folks in, I think they're located near Seattle or something. And they do a lot of coaching for MI, and you can submit recordings, and they go over the recording and code it for MI adherence, and then they give you a little coaching and feedback on it. And it can be very helpful. And what you're saying is you're not sure that just doing that is enough, and that it would be important for you to go back over the recording yourself.
Right? Like using the technique that you suggested, and I think it was actually in one of your tips that you sent out recently where you said to, well, and it would work with like the cheerleading versus affirmations too, because like listening for those times whenever you maybe like where I was being a cheerleader or I didn't respond to change talk. And like catching that and then writing out what my responses should be, because that's where I think I'm struggling is in the moment my mind is just like one track and it's hard for me to like catch
absolutely and you're focused on the client and all the content that they're giving you, and there isn't it doesn't feel like there's brain space in there to be creative. So slowing it down and, you know, going part way through a recording and then just going stop. Okay. Now, right now, does it make sense for me to be doing an affirmation here? Let me come up with a few. Was there any change talk? Have I reflected it? If I reflected, how could I do that? And, you know, just really slow motion. Absolutely. You like that idea, Ashley.
Yes, it was. It's a good idea. It seems so simple. I should have thought of it on my own, but.
You don't have to give yourself a hard time about it. That's not necessary. And what you're describing, Ashley, is of course, really common. That experience of you learn about MI and go, oh, right, that makes sense. It's relatively easy to sort of understand, but then actually doing it is a whole other thing. It takes an awful lot of practice. And you're not alone. Okay. Other questions, concerns? Okay. There
well,
aren't any
I can
more.
Ask I ask another question.
Sure. Sure.
So,
who is this?
What? This is Ashley again.
Okay. Sure.
So I'm wondering, from a motivational interviewing perspective, if you have a client who, like, let's say their goal is weight loss, and they have made some changes, and they have been their own ideas. So it's like, you know, truly trying to use motivational interviewing to help promote mm-hmm. behavior change. But then they aren't seeing the results that they are hoping for. And, like, I guess you would ask permission to give suggestions, but even then it feels like I don't want to be too much of the expert because I know that's not in the spirit of motivational interviewing. So I'm curious how you
mm-hmm.
would recommend handling things like that.
Well, it sounds like there are two possibilities depending on the situation. I mean, whenever there's a concern about the outcomes either not happening or it's not clear what the outcomes, desired outcomes are or whatever, you might want to take a look at tip number 29, which is in volume 2, on working with outcomes and helping a client explore outcomes in addition to weight loss. Because, of course, there's always the focus on weight loss, and help the client explore what, you know, what that would look like for them and what outcomes in addition to that. I mean, whether it's having a little bit more stamina or being able to play with their grandkids more, or because some of those things, of course, can be you can get partway there by doing more exercise or doing stretching or something. Or are the outcomes to feel a little bit more sane about their relationship with food? And, you know, so exploring outcome, a broad range of outcomes can be part of it. I think, Ashley, I'm also hearing you say that you're looking at how the changes they've made and you're thinking, right, in order for their weight to go down, they're going to have to be more changes and I know what they ought to be. Is that sort of what you're thinking?
Yeah, and I know that sounds bad. Like, I know better than
well,
you.
Well, no, I don't mean in a negative way. I'm just being blunt, you know. Like,
yeah.
But
yeah.
You sort of see the picture, and you can see where they get the most bang for their buck by making changes.
Right. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, you ask permission. You go into the illicit little format. You can sort of say, I'm hearing you've made a lot of changes and you're very pleased about that and you're a little puzzled about why you haven't gotten any of the outcome that you're looking for yet. I might have some thoughts for you on that. How about we talk about that? First, you get permission. And then remember the first illicit is, what are your thoughts? So you can say to the guy, so what are your thoughts about what else might work and get you in that direction? And then you elicit whatever they've got. And then you offer your specific information in, remember, a neutral manner. That's one of the things about MI. Factual, for example, wine or beer has X number of calories per can, and let's see, that's 3 cans per day, so that's, and then you do the math, and then you say, let's see, if that was 1 can a day, that would be about a pound a week, right? And that would be your factual what you'd be offering him, right, if he's drinking three beers a day. So you'd offer some specific, you know, facts, and then you'd follow up and say, what's your take on what I just shared with you? And you see what he says. Actually, you seem reluctant to give facts or advice.
Well, I feel like I tend to kind of fall into the education mode. So I don't want, it's all kind of connected, right? So I don't want this particular client to come to me and we talk about, okay, well, here are some things that I think might help you along your way towards your goal of this weight loss or whatever it is. And then, like, let's say they take that suggestion and it's not going well and they don't want to, like, they don't want to open up with me. And so I'm always a little bit worried about giving advice.
Do you mean that, when you say not going well, they're not doing it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's not your fault. I mean, that's not your, your job is to give your professional take. Now, ideally, if right up front they say, I don't think I'm going to do that, that's great if they're being forthcoming. If what tends to happen is, oh, okay, I'll do that, and then they don't, yeah, that's a whole different thing. Then it makes sense to acknowledge that what would be, it depends on the situation, but something along the lines of, oh, it sounds like you bit off a little more than you could chew at first, or turns out this is trickier than you thought it was going to be. Would you like to take a look at that and see how I might help you? Acknowledge it. And this is hard because people can get embarrassed when they don't do something.
Right.
Yeah. And the more you just sort of acknowledge it, welcome it, say, yep, this is, I hear, you know, didn't work out the way you thought it would. Well, how about we go back to square one and, you know, or not quite square one, but square three or whatever, and take a look at it and see what make it more doable.
Molly,
Gail.
Would this be a potential opportunity for an experiment instead of a do it? Like, let's just try, you know, maybe we could experiment for a X number of times. I like your idea. It would be interesting to see what he says if you go, you know, what are your thoughts about what's going on? You know, what do you see happening? But then from there, jump into, well, what might you be able to do differently, you know? And then as an experiment versus a long term, and then let's get together and evaluate our experiment. And maybe there could be more than one, but.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people, particularly people who think they're going to do something and then they don't, and you have to figure out what's getting in the way. And having an experimental mindset can certainly help. It's always a little tricky, though, because you want it to be the client's experiment, not yours. You don't want them to feel like they're the guinea pig. So playing around with the language and maybe even something like, some of my clients find it useful to think of it as a one-week experiment. How would that be for you? As opposed to, let's do it. You know, let's do an experiment. Which could, to some people, feel like, oh, I guess I have to go along with it.
I guess the point I was getting at is absolutely not do a let's do it, but to, just as you put it in your more gentle way, leave it up to them and design it using their voice. I mean, they design it. Now, how would we do that? Well, how would you see that would first happen? Well, then what would happen?
Right.
Let them put it together.
Right. And what would you be observing during this experiment? And, you know, and if they happen to be a scientist or understand scientific language, you could use the word protocol. What's your protocol going to be? What data are you going to collect? You know, what's your, what are the other terms? You know, not quite statistics. I don't think they'll be doing statistics, but, you know, you can totally get into it being an experiment if they get into it, right? Particularly with clients who sort of keep coming back and they're there, working with experimental approach can help if they're game for it, if that makes sense to them. And occasionally you can sort of hear it in their voice to begin with. They can say, well, I guess I could try that. And you're getting the sense that the try is not the, oh, I'll try to do it, but the, I'll try it out. You can then sort of boost that up a little bit and say, so you're going to do a one-week experiment, and when we come back, we'll, you know, we'll take a look at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how are we doing, Ashley?
Yeah, that's helpful. And again, I think I do need to, the recording session tip is a good one, and I think I need to apply that to kind of improve on all these things that you're talking about.
Somebody's got a kid there.
My son just woke up. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Okay. What else have we got here? Anything else?
This is Gail. I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I have a supervisee who has never, she's fairly new and working in a treatment facility that's not primary eating disorders and has never had motivational interviewing training, which is like, oh my gosh, how are you ever even doing what you do? And then I had thought, Molly, you know, we were looking at maybe doing training in the spring, January through, you know, as a group here in Tucson. But the fact that you just mentioned you have two, you are now doing virtual and you have two spots open, I'm wondering about language to encourage her to invest in herself and do it with you, which I think would be an outstanding boost to her counseling expertise.
And I'm hearing you say you sense she's not gung-ho about doing that.
I think there's going to be a little resistance, and also there's a price tag here that I have to overcome that objection also.
Yeah, certainly.
Although her work may support her, and I could put together a proposal that would encourage that.
Well, I don't see any reason you wouldn't use the same MI skills with her, in a sense. I mean, and a sort of a, an illicit provide illicit, almost I'm picturing here, the illicit, it in the moments when she's feeling frustrated or she's aware of not having all the skills she could have or whatever, you could say, well, let's see, what are your thoughts about how to get some training or move forward and see what she says, and then ask permission to suggest that there are recorded online programs and also virtual trainings available. And you can tell her about mine. There are other ones as well. And they have different commitments to them. I mean, mine has two levels of commitment because the Steps to Counseling Excellence program is all online. You do it at your own pace. And that's a commitment of $214. And then the virtual course is $449 unless you've already done the Steps program, in which case you get the discount because you've already got that portion of it. But you can say, this is available, and there are these different options. And you can look up other people's options, you know, other people's trainings as well, and just sort of present them to her and say, what are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
And you'd be modeling MI for her, right?
Yeah. Yes, very good. Very well put. And I'm just thinking I'm going to have to, I would want to make a phone call since you're saying there's only two spots left.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to wait till our next regularly mm-hmm. scheduled meeting. So
mm-hmm.
I think I can do a blend of here's an opportunity. We've already talked about this as being a tremendous
mm-hmm.
This would be a tremendous thing to add to your professional development and your comfort
mm-hmm.
in doing the job you
yeah.
do. Okay. All
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Other suggestions or questions or anything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we can wind up, and I hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving, such as it is this year.
Yeah, you too,
a
Molly.
A little different. Okay.
Yeah.
Take care, everybody. Yep.
Stay well.
Yeah. Bye.